If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
Republican lawmakers say we need it to protect election integrity. Democrats say the new measures will restrict voter access. It's River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer, today with co-host Katarina Sestarik, IPR's state government reporter. Hi, Katarina.
Hi, Ben.
This hour, we're going to be hearing the arguments for and against sweeping changes to Iowa's election laws, contained in a bill that quickly moved through both chambers of the Republican-controlled legislature last week in party-line votes. It's now on the governor's desk awaiting her signature. We'd like to have you join our conversation this hour as well. Questions, concerns, observations about how Iowa conducts its elections and how these laws will change that. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. In just a few moments, Katarina and I will be joined by two lawmakers, Representatives Bobby Kaufman and Mary Masher will join us. Before we do that, let's get acquainted or reacquainted, as the case may be, with the measures in this bill. Katarina, lay out some of the main points, the most impactful and perhaps the most contentious ones.
Some of the parts of this very wide-ranging bill that I think most voters will probably notice if it gets signed into law is that early voting would start 20 days before Election Day instead of the current 29. And that would be the same with the beginning of mailing absentee ballots under current law that can start 29 days before Election Day. This would start 20 days before Election Day. And then the deadline for receiving absentee ballots would be the time that polls close on Election Day, with some exceptions, instead of the current law that says you just have to have it in the mail by the day before Election Day, and then it can arrive by noon the Monday following Election Day. So that kind of shortens the mail voting period from both ends. And then polls would also close at 8 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. during general elections. There were also some parts that are responding to some issues that happened during the 2020 election in Iowa. There were some county auditors who took some steps, just a few who took some steps that not everyone agreed should have happened. And so there's, you know, proposing felony charges for county auditors who failed to perform an election duty, some potential large fines for technical infractions by county election officials, and also just a lot more provisions dealing with voting that could change a lot of things in Iowa's election laws.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, you mentioned county auditors. They're a big part of this bill, or a main part. We'll be joined in our second half hour by the president of the Iowa Association of County Auditors. Once again, for our listeners, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Let's invite Representative Bobby Kaufman back on the program. He's a Republican from Cedar County. Representative Kaufman, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I've been out moving cows all morning, so I paused just for this. Happy to be here.
And you had some sunshine out there, I'm sure.
Yes, and a lot of melting snow.
Okay, very good. In just a moment, your Democratic colleague, Representative Mary Masher, will join us, but let's talk to you for a few minutes before she does, because this is a Republican initiative here that's on the governor's desk for her signature. Representative Kaufman, Iowa's turnout rate in 2020, this past election, was 76%, among the highest in the country. The election was secure here in Iowa. No cases of election fraud reported. You could make a very good case for celebrating this massive voter turnout, but instead, it's being dialed back by this new measure of access to voting. Why?
Well, I would disagree with that characterization. And I am celebrating a successful election. It was a tremendous election. There was no notable fraud in Iowa. So I don't disagree with that concern. But, and you didn't use the word voter suppression, but that's what Representative Masher will use. That's what I kept hearing on the House floor. This bill has nothing to do with voter suppression. This bill has everything to do with election integrity. And here's the important thing. We have a track record. So I compare government to a business. What do you do when you have a very successful year in business? Do you sit back and celebrate? Do you throw a party? Do you hope that it replicates itself? No, you look for ways that you can improve on the things you did right and the things you did wrong. And we have a track record in Iowa of having done three election bills since the 2017 session. And I would argue that all three of those Republican-led bills, which at the time received even more pushback than this bill, were on the books, and I would argue contributing to that extremely successful 2020 election. So this is just us continuing that tradition of passing good election laws to improve our integrity. And my goal with this bill is the 2022 and 2024 elections will be even more successful than 2020 was.
Representative Kaufman, I am wondering, with, you know, the shortening of the early voting period, shortening it to 20 days before Election Day, is that's in line with plenty of other states and with the average nationally. But shortening the mail-in voting period from the front end and the back end would bring it to one of the shortest mail voting periods in the country. Why do you think that is necessary, shortening it to that extent?
Well, I don't agree that's one of the shortest in the country. I'm sitting here looking at a 50-state breakdown. I brought this from floor debate, and I'm counting double-digit states. I'm sitting here literally looking at them, of states that have a longer overall period than us. So just to address your questions in reverse, on the back end, you know, this bill has a lot of stuff with auditors and what they do and do not want. A bipartisan group of auditors came to me and have come to me in past years and have said, hey, we want the certainty of if you don't have the ballot in by the time the polls close, it doesn't count. The same way that your vote doesn't count in person if you don't get there by the time the polls close. And so I did that last part in response to auditors asking for that certainty of here's when the cutoff is. As far as the front end, you're exactly right. We're middle of the road in terms of states that do the absentee voting timeframes. And I just would point to Democratic-run states such as Connecticut, who doesn't even have in-person voting, Delaware, who doesn't even have early voting, Maryland, in-person early voting ends the Thursday before the election, and early post and absentee voting ends the second Monday before the election. And I could go on, Massachusetts, New York. I mean, New York is 10 days and two as far as the early in-person voting begins and the early in-person voting ends. So I would just point to, I know that was a lot of words and a lot of numbers at once, but I gave all those examples rapidly like that to show that there are so many states that have far less than we do and no problems have existed, literally none, zero. And so I think that 493 hours, that's what is in this bill, which will give Iowans the time to early vote, is plenty of time for any Iowan to vote, and we're right at the national average.
Right. Well, and as I said, the national average for in-person early voting, but the mail voting would be crunched on both ends. And so I guess, and I know in floor debate, you have said, and you kind of referenced this at the beginning of your comments as well, you have said that this bill won't suppress one single vote. How do you know that?
Because I know that Iowans are smart enough to figure out how to vote. I mean, this 493 hours, I challenge any human being, whether it's you, Representative Masher, or anybody, and I have yet to hear it. We've had public hearings and subcommittees and floor debate. Nobody has told me that there is not a way in 493 hours to vote early if you so choose. And so that is how I'm certain, is because the range of options you have, in addition to satellite voting and Dropbox and the usual voting in person, the range is so vast. To say that it's going to suppress Iowans, in my interpretation, is saying that Iowans aren't smart enough to figure it out, and I think they are.
Okay, if you just joined us, Representative Bobby Kaufman is with us, a Republican in the Iowa legislature, and we invite your calls, 1-866-780-9100. Before we do, talking about the new bill, the bill that passed both chambers as on the governor's desk with sweeping changes to Iowa's election law. We also have Representative Mary Masher, a Democrat from Johnson County, with us. Representative Masher, welcome to the program. We want to get you in, of course, before the callers, and then do as much back and forth as we can before the end in the second half hour. Welcome. Mary Masher, respond to Representative Kaufman there, saying his points about not restricting voting, and that in previous times, Democrats have claimed that Republican actions would restrict voting and voter suppression would be a result, but that has not been the case.
Well, this was a very different election year, and due to COVID, there were many people who were very fearful about going to the polls. Our auditors were concerned about finding enough poll workers because many of our poll workers are older Iowans as well. So they were scrambling even to find people to work at the polls. So in the wisdom of the state, our executive council and the Secretary of State's office sent out an absentee ballot request to every single eligible voter in Iowa. That is why our turnout was phenomenal. If this bill would have just done that, and we would have allowed those absentee ballot requests to go to everyone every election, we would continue to see that kind of turnout. That is not what this bill does. It shortens many of our voting opportunities, and it's quite interesting. Originally, we heard that it was because Iowans wanted to have the election season shortened. Well, that didn't resonate very well, and so we haven't heard much about that anymore because this bill does nothing to shorten the election season. Then we heard that it was about security and integrity. There's no fraud in Iowa, and there's no problem with security in our elections. Our auditors do a phenomenal job. We should be appraising them instead of trying to punish them. They were trying to do everything they could to accommodate voters and to provide more opportunities for them to vote, whether it was drop boxes. We had drive-in voting in Johnson County where people could drive up, bring their IDs, what they needed, and vote from their cars. Those were the kinds of things that our auditors were doing to accommodate voters. So we had a great turnout because of a pandemic and because everyone was sent an absentee ballot request. This bill does not do that. It will make it harder for Iowans to vote by shortening that time frame. And we had this comment on the floor about, well, Iowans should just plan better. Well, that's very difficult. We know that sometimes things, events can happen in a person's life, whether it's a death in a family or an illness, somebody ending up in a hospital. Those kinds of things can create all kinds of barriers to voting. It's not that people can't vote when they're in a hospital or a nursing home. It's just that if you're unconscious, it's a little hard to do that. Or if you were planning on voting at the polls on election day and you get out of the hospital too late, you will not be able to vote by absentee, even if you are homebound. So those are the kinds of things that we had issues with and were very concerned about in terms of why this is a bill that really and truly is trying to fix a problem when we know the system is not broken. So that's why we were so adamantly opposed to this legislation. And quite frankly, when you look at other states, we're better here in Iowa. We try to do everything we can to provide opportunities for people to poll and vote. And quite frankly, this does not do that. It takes away from Iowans and their rights to vote.
Representative Masher, I want to touch on, you were talking about how some of the county auditors did more creative things, like you mentioned the drive-in voting in Johnson County. But of course, there were the issues with sending out pre-filled absentee ballot request forms that were then invalidated by courts that three county auditors sent out. And this bill expressly prohibits that and then also proposes potential felony charges, fines for violating the Secretary of State's guidance. I'm wondering, some election experts say that election uniformity is important for election integrity in states. So do you think there should be steps taken to increase election uniformity across counties so that people have, the same opportunity to vote in each county? Or do you think there's a different way that that could be done?
You know, that's a good question. And obviously, the auditors who chose to do that were not doing that to break the law. There was nothing that prevented them from doing that in the law. And that was challenged in court, and it was determined that they could not send out the PIN numbers on those absentee ballot requests. And so as a result of that, they ended up having to send another ballot out without the PIN numbers on it. But again, we were trying to, it was very clear that they were not trying to violate the law. They were just trying to help voters because many of them did not know those PIN numbers. Many of them don't have driver's licenses anymore or an ID that would have been suitable. And so that was why those folks did that. It wasn't because they had a blatant disregard for the law or didn't believe in security or integrity. They followed the law very clearly and were very concerned about making sure that our elections were secure. Nothing they did violated anybody's ballot or in any way challenged integrity of our system.
Representatives Mary Masher and Representative Bobby Kaufman with us, Republican and Democrats, for and against new measures on the governor's desk passed both chambers yesterday. Let's go to our callers. I want to remind all of our callers, we only have our guests until half past the hour. And so please get right to the nugget of your question or comment, and we'll have our guests respond. Cindy is with us from Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering about the satellite voting. I didn't quite get that, what they're trying to do with that.
Representative Kaufman, explain a little bit more the changes in satellite voting in the counties.
Yep, happy to do so. Current law allows for you to get 100 petition signatures for a satellite voting location, or it stays silent on whether auditors are allowed to continue to choose to put them in locations they've been in the past. We wanted to make it clear that you need to have that petition requirement, just like you need to have a petition requirement for us to get on the ballot. I acknowledge that there needs to be a change, that we need to be able to give county auditors the ability to say no if they cannot afford multiple locations that are too close together. And so I am looking to put that fix in the election technical bill, which we do most years. It's going to be coming up soon. But I do believe you should have to get 100 signatures and show actual public intent for something as important as an election satellite voting spot.
Cindy, does that clear it up for you?
I just feel that that's a little, it's not like a person trying to run for office. People are just trying to vote.
Mm-hmm. Representative Masher, perhaps you can weigh in on the satellite voting aspect here.
We asked a lot of questions on the floor about the satellite sites because obviously auditors, and they're getting their budgets from the county supervisors, they don't have a blank check. So if somebody requests 100 sites and they can't afford that, an auditor should be able to refuse. If it's not an ADA accessible site in terms of for handicapped voters, that should be able to be turned down. Those things need to be clarified in the law. The other issue that we run into is the satellite sites are there for a reason, and the auditors are our best county officials to be able to determine where the best sites are. So we have trusted them in the past to be able to set up those satellite sites because they know which ones work best and they know which ones are most popular. So your libraries, your city halls, some of those locations, they already know and have vetted and have determined that they are handicapped accessible and that they are locations that people frequent and are used to going to. So that's what we want to be able to continue, is to allow our auditors to have that discretion. They know their counties, they know their voters, they know where they should be located, and those satellite sites are very important for early voting.
Let's go to another caller. Tricia is with us from Iowa City. Coming up on the break, Tricia, we're sure glad to have you. Please be concise.
Hi. I watched the hearing on the House floor, also looked at the public comments, which were overwhelmingly against this bill. And in response to Representative Masher saying that, Representative Kaufman said, and I'm quoting, "Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Iowans want this bill." So I would ask him, what makes him say that, and where is any sort of evidence that we can look at that Iowans want this bill? Thanks.
Thank you, Tricia. Representative Kaufman.
Well, I'm glad that she brought up that she watched the Florida debate, because she would have noticed, and Representative Master has said twice now, that they asked questions on the floor. Not one Democrat asked me one question during the floor debate, not one. So I think that's an important thing to note. Secondly, as I said on the floor, when the 59 of us Republicans go home every week, we spend time at our grocery stores and our gas stations and our hardware stores. We also have lots and lots of emails in our inboxes. It is not a point of dispute where anybody can doubt. I am telling you emphatically, thousands and thousands and thousands of Iowans have had conversations with our Republican caucus members saying they want this bill. That is not up for debate or interpretation. It's happened. I've been a part of it, as have my colleagues.
Okay.
Representative Kaufman, you've said that, as you said, that people are concerned about election integrity, and you've said people not having faith in our election system. You've called that the worst form of disenfranchisement. I think I'm paraphrasing you there. But I guess I'm wondering, you've also said that this bill isn't about election fraud, but aren't you responding to concerns about election fraud when you say that you are responding to the people who believe that the election was stolen?
Not at all. There are blatant holes in our absentee voting security system, one of the main ones being ballot harvesting. When you go vote in person, it's extremely secure. But when you have random strangers canvassing neighborhoods, taking ballots with no accountability, that's a major problem. Did we have a major problem in 2020 with that? I can't point to it. But just because you don't see a fox in the hen house doesn't mean you don't put up the fence.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have about a minute left. Representative Masher, please, your concluding remarks before we say goodbye to both of you.
Thank you, and I appreciate being on today. There has been a myth and a lie that has been spread throughout the nation that this election was a stolen election. It was a lie, and people believe that lie, and that's extremely unfortunate. Voting is one of the pillars of our democracy, and we are extremely proud of the integrity of our voting system in Iowa. There was no fraud here. There was no fraud in 60 other states where courts threw out those challenges to this election. So it's really unfortunate that we're seeing these drastic changes in election law across the country, when we know this was one of the best run elections we've seen in many, many years. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that many people were allowed to vote by mail or early, and it was an extremely big turnout. It was the highest in 120 years. And okay. So if you look at that, you got to think, well, something must have gone right if you have that kind of a record turnout. And that, to me, says it all. We need to make voting more accessible, not less.
Well, thank you very much for your views, Representatives Mary Masher, Democrat from Johnson County, and Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican from Cedar County. Both of you, thank you for joining, and thanks to our callers for joining in our discussion. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk to the Sioux County Auditor. He's the president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors. They are against this. When we come back, Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarek. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with my co-host this hour, Katarina Sestarek, IPR's state government reporter. In this hour, we're hearing arguments for and against sweeping changes to Iowa's election laws, a bill that quickly moved through both chambers of the Republican-controlled legislature last week, is now on the governor's desk awaiting her signature. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Many things in this bill, some of the most talked about things. Early voting would start 20 days before Election Day instead of 29. The deadline for receiving absentee ballots would be the time that the polls close on Election Day. Current law says it has to be in the mail by that day. Polls closing earlier at 8 o'clock statewide instead of 9 p.m. for general elections. Also, a number of facets here that pertain to county auditors, potential large fines for technical infractions by county auditors. We'll talk to the president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors in just a moment. But first of all, Katarina, there was a public hearing last week on Monday many speakers in this public hearing. I'd like to hear a couple of clips from a couple of the speakers from last Monday and then have you comment on them. Our first is from Kyle Coya. Let's listen to what he has to say.
I think at best this bill makes it needlessly more difficult for Iowans to vote, and at its worst, suppress the votes of millions of Iowans. Shortening the time for early voting and absentee voting as proposed in this bill will lead to needlessly longer lines on election day. If we think about the news reports in other states where people are in line for hours, we shouldn't strive for that. That's not what I think Iowa needs to be. But unfortunately, this bill pushes us in that direction where we get to be on the news talking about hour-long lines to vote. Just over 4 years ago, Iowans had 40 days prior to the election to receive an absentee ballot and vote. This bill would reduce that all the way down to 18 days, which is barely enough time for the auditors to mail out the ballot, the voter to receive them, and then for the voter to return it back to the auditors, especially given Postal Service delays that we've spoken about that this bill does not address. Couple that with limiting the number of drop boxes and banning satellite voting locations, and Iowans throughout the state will see their ability to have their voices heard severely limited.
Kyle Coya, obviously speaking against the bill, and I understand, Katerina, many speakers, the majority of the speakers, speaking against this bill in that public hearing last Monday.
Right. The majority of speakers there were against the bill, as well as the people registered online. And I do just want to point out, Kyle was speaking before the bill was amended. So now bill would put 20 days of early voting. And then it also wouldn't ban satellite voting locations, but would put limits on how those are decided. But as you heard from Kyle, he's very concerned about the effect that this bill could have on Iowa voters.
Okay, let's hear a voice in favor of this from last Monday's public hearing. This is Emily Russell.
Very few things are more fundamental to the success of this country and of this state than our elections, which is why election misconduct is a very serious matter, and it only makes sense that our laws should reflect that. It should be exceptionally difficult for anyone to cheat, and I cannot fathom why that is a controversial opinion in a state like Iowa, where we are often admired for our values. We need to face the reality that after recent events surrounding the 2020 election, many Americans do not have faith in our elections. This should concern all of you because it affects all of us. If we don't start taking steps to increase public confidence in the integrity of our elections now, all of us will continue to live in a divided society.
Okay, comment on that, Katerina, because this is a theme nationwide. She talked about election misconduct. These are the most free and fair elections according to the data that we've had.
Right. And I mean, Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman talked about this in the first half of the show, saying that, he said many Iowans, he's heard from people who want changes to the election laws. While election experts say this was a largely secure and accurate election, there are a lot of people who believe otherwise, and a lot of that is Republican voters, and a lot of that is because the leader of the Republican Party, former President Donald Trump, was telling people that there was massive fraud in the election system that there just isn't evidence to support.
Okay. Let's hear from a couple of other guests this hour, in addition to any callers we may be able to fit in. Ryan Doctor is with us. He's the Sioux County Auditor and President of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Your Association of County Auditors is against this bill. As I understand it, no county auditor in all of Iowa's 99 counties has spoken in favor of it. What are the main reasons county auditors are against this?
Yeah, so like a lot of the comments that we've been hearing from different media sources, you know, one of the big aspects is cutting 9 days off of the absentee voting. That's a big one for us, especially considering even with 29 days, we're really pressed to do everything that we need to do in the election in a timely manner. And now compressing those days makes that even a greater challenge. Obviously, we'll have to work more hours, hire more staff to try to mitigate the absentee voting side of things. And then we'll have to look very, very closely at election day. Do we have enough people hired to manage the flow of people on election day considering that we may have less people voting absentee and things like that. So that was one of the bigger concerns we had. Obviously, some of the penalties associated with election misconduct, and you know, it's what I keep hearing from people is the willful misconduct is going to be the things that are really problematic. One thing that we need as an association and as county auditors is clear guidance on what constitutes a technical infraction. We have past experience of what some counties have been issued or what things have been done to incur one of those technical infractions, but I think having that clearly defined is going to help us as well, understanding, you know, what that clear line is in terms of what mistakes are made and the severity of those mistakes. Along with that, county home rule being stripped from counties in regards to elections, I think, you know, especially the Republican Party is about smaller government and having, you know, ceding some of that power to the state is kind of against, you know, some of our core values as Republicans. So, and hopefully that's something that can be looked at really closely in terms of, you know, if there's any kind of challenges to this bill, that can be closely looked at to see if that's something that's a constitutionally protected thing for counties or if that can be stripped through this legislation. So those are a couple of things that, among the many that were in this bill, those are the couple of things that we've identified that were, you know, bigger items for us as auditors.
The lawmakers who are kind of leading the charge on this bill have said that the poll closing time, moving it from 9 p.m. to 8 p.m., and then also having the deadline for absentee ballots to be in by the time polls close on Election Day, that those were recommended by the Association of County Auditors. Can you talk about why you requested those changes and if you still support them in this bill?
Sure. So in terms of the poll closing at 8 p.m. for all elections, that's been one of our priorities, at least the last 3 to 4 years, I'm guessing. I haven't looked back much past that. And the reason being is it's an extremely long day for our election workers. You know, they're there prior to about 6 a.m. in the morning, and many of our workers are, you know, 65 and above. So having them close the night at 9 p.m. and, you know, finishing all the nightly work that goes with elections, you know, some of these folks are getting home at 11, 11:30 at night, and that's a tremendously big day for somebody, you know, that might be retired and hasn't worked that kind of a day in a number of years. That being said, we would not have preferred closing at 8 p.m. knowing we're going to lose 9 days of absentee voting. So that's one aspect of that. The other one with counting ballots, absentee ballots, by the close of polls, that was one of our priorities approximately 3 years ago. And this was prior to the intelligent mail barcode system being implemented for counties and that being a requirement for counties. We quickly pivoted from that priority from 3 years ago to the IMB, the intelligent mail barcode, if I use an acronym, but because we felt like as an association, we can actually end up counting more ballots in case that absentee ballot lacks a postmark. We can look back at data from the Postal Service and see when that ballot entered the mail stream. So then we can verify that and make sure we can count those ballots. Mm-hmm. So I do see the benefit of SureCount, but you know, seeing how we pivoted to a system where we could be more inclusive with ballots, you know, that's another thing that we quickly pivoted from in order to count more ballots.
Ryan Doctor, as president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, you, of course, represent all of Iowa's 99 county auditors. We're coming up on the end of our time for this conversation, but please tell us about the difference it makes depending on which county you are in, because in some counties, Polk, for instance, Johnson, Lynn, you know, larger population counties, it's a much different job than it is for a county that has maybe 10, 15, 20,000 people total, right?
You know, I haven't, you know, my county has about 35,000 people, of which about 23,000 people are registered to vote. I can't even wrap my brain around a Polk County, Johnson County, Linn County, those size counties, the number of people they have to hire, the number of locations they have to administer, some of the things they do with satellite voting. That was another aspect of the bill that takes away the auditor's ability to set up satellite polling locations for their counties. And I've heard from many of those folks and how that is going to be really tough because, again, we're talking about not creating lines for our polling locations or an overwhelming number of people at our courthouses or administration buildings for people voting absentee. So some of those tools were very helpful for us to mitigate some of those things and run an efficient election. So, again, a lot more planning and probably a lot more overtime is going to be needed in order to try to pull off elections in the same manner we had previously.
Okay, Ryan Doctor, Sioux County Auditor, President of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors. Thank you very much for your time and your views.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's finish up the hour. Ben Kiefer with Katarina Sestarik. If you've just joined us, let's finish up the hour with Derek Muller. He often joins us as a professor of law at the University of Iowa College of Law with a focus in his work on election law. Derek Muller, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We have just over 5 minutes to talk about this. So many parts of this bill, we don't have time to go through the whole litany here, but what parts of this bill jump out at you as having the biggest impact or are most contentious here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a couple of takeaways. I think the first is trying to figure out what the absentee voting period is going to look like and its effects. You know, I think on the one hand, an objective is this will encourage people to vote in person more, either in person or on election day. On the flip side, I think, when it's an experiment, when you change deadlines and see how they're going to be administered going forward and changing deadlines, both starting mailing absentee ballots 20 days out and receiving them by the close of polls is going to be something I'm going to keep an eye on. Another is thinking about the home rule. You know, I think in a lot of states, there are efforts to bring statewide elections into more uniform guidance. I think there's a lot of benefits to that. At the same time, there's understandable flexibility in a state with 99 counties to be thinking about how they're administered in a wide variety of places. So I'm looking at that too. And finally, it makes it a little bit tougher for independent third-party Libertarian Green Party candidates to get on the ballot, which the legislature made a little bit tougher a few years ago. They're making it even more difficult now. So I'm interested to see if there are just going to be fewer and fewer options on the ballot.
Right. And go into that just a moment, because we didn't talk about that the entire hour. But that's interesting, because if there's a Libertarian candidate on the ballot, that can have a real impact on who actually wins. Not that perhaps the Libertarian wouldn't win, but it could be a kingmaker, for instance, to have that or not have that on the ballot, right?
Right. So a lot of times Republicans and Democrats tend to agree there should be fewer third-party candidates on the ballot. So maybe it's a reason it hasn't come up as much. But certainly, I think third-party independent candidates too. So, you know, some people critique them as playing spoiler, preventing one candidate from getting a majority by siphoning support from them. But in other places, you know, they play a viable role in encouraging sort of the political dialogue and voices that might not otherwise be heard among the major party candidates.
Mm-hmm. Derek, comment on the political implications, and I assume Republicans, Representative Bobby Kaufman would have probably denied this, I'm pretty sure, but here's a quote from Senator Lindsey Graham just on Fox News just a day or two after the election. I'm sure you know the quotes that I'm going to refer to. He said, "Mail-in balloting is a nightmare for us. We're never going to win again presidentially. If we don't do something about voting by mail, we're going to lose the ability to elect a Republican in this country." Is that what is unspoken by Republicans across the country, but in this case, spoken by Senator Graham?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, despite the fact that there was extensive absentee voting in this election, Republicans made a lot of pickups. They didn't lose as many seats in the Senate as they thought. They picked up a couple of state legislatures around the country. And in the 80s, it was Ronald Reagan who signed into law one of the most significant expansions of absentee voting ever in the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act. So in some ways, it's sort of interesting to think about the ebb and flow at the moment. You know, I'm not sure absentee voting particularly helps one side or another, but undoubtedly, there are a lot of Republicans who are concerned about it right now. And that's, I think, you know, played out in the rhetoric from Senator Graham and others that you're hearing right now.
We're hearing, of course, you know, over and over again in these election law debates in the legislature, Democrats saying this is voter suppression and Republicans saying this isn't going to suppress a single vote. Obviously, it's more complicated than that. But is there, from an academic expert standpoint, is there a good way to truly measure if certain election laws are keeping people from voting?
Yeah, so it's really hard to measure. There are so many variables to look at. Turnout can ebb and flow depending on whether it's a presidential election, the strength of the Senate or governor's candidates on the ballot. You know, there's actually evidence out there at times that extending absentee voting and early voting has occasionally depressed turnout because election season feels super long. At the same time, there's no question that absentee voting undoubtedly expands opportunities for people to participate in the process, whether you're, you know, confined in a senior citizen's home or you are away at college somewhere. So in my judgment, it's very hard to sort of measure all of these things, especially in the abstract. This bill does a number of things altogether, and it's not clear to me how that's going to play out until you sort of wait and see. You know, I think a lot of people are concerned about shortening absentee ballot window from 40 to 29 days. It doesn't appear that that had too much of an impact on turnout, I would say. So the question is, can we wait and see what happens if that's shortened to 20 days, or what happens if the deadline is on election day? You know, it's kind of a wait and see approach, and then we'll see if one side or another is vindicated. My sense is it's probably somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Derek Mueller, can you comment where, you know, this is on the governor's desk. There's no indication that I know of, perhaps you do, that the governor will not sign it if it becomes law. Where would this put Iowa in the context of other states' election laws?
Yeah, so a number of states are moving to do some of the things that Iowa has done. For instance, the ballot harvesting ban, prohibiting third parties from collecting ballots and restricting it to members of your family or caretakers or people in your household, things like that. So some states have moved in that direction. In terms of absentee voting, you know, again, there are few places that have a 20-day limit that I'm aware of in terms of sending out the absentee ballots. So that, to me, I think puts Iowa at a little bit more of a limited opportunity for absentee voting. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, increasing uniformity in the election, you know, eliminating some of the home rule is, again, I think a lot of states and the secretaries of state are trying to provide more uniform guidance for what's happening in statewide elections. Why should there be 99 different standards when there could be one? So I think there's no question that the kinds of things that the legislature's enacted here are some things we've seen in other states. I'm interested to see how the absentee ballot window plays out over the next few years.
There are some other states that are Republican-led states that are moving to change their absentee voting laws right now. And, you know, I think of Georgia, where obviously that state flipped for Democrats and in the presidential election and Senate elections. And Iowa, though, Republicans won across the board pretty much. And so I'm wondering if what you see there, just in terms of in the political climate, like why are Iowa and other states that had Republicans win by large margins also looking at these changes?
Yeah, I mean, there is a if it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality that might be out there to think, you know, if you've been successful as the majority in the legislature, why are you making changes? Undoubtedly, I think absentee voting is one of the softer places, if you will, that there are greater potentials for fraud, for risks of that. Again, it's rare, and I think very rare in Iowa. It's happened in other places. So if you're looking for a target and the narrative out there is about fraud, that I think has become one of the places that people look. At the same time, states like Utah and Florida have extremely generous absentee procedures, and there's little effort in those jurisdictions at the moment to do very much about them. So in some ways, you could say all politics is local. It just kind of depends on the state. But in some ways, some state leaders are taking their cues from some of the national conversation, and some Republicans are in ways that they aren't in other jurisdictions.
Derek Mueller, thank you for joining us the last few minutes of this hour as we discuss the sweeping changes to Iowa's election law on the governor's desk. Still a bill at this point, not signed into law yet. Derek Mueller, professor of law, University of Iowa College of Law. We appreciate always your expertise, Derek. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for me and Katarina Sestarek today. Reminder, tomorrow, state tax breaks and government contracts for big tech companies like Google and Facebook could be canceled under a bill backed by some Iowa Republicans. Tomorrow, we'll talk about social media's efforts to explore, to counter misinformation, while at the same time preserving free speech. That's on the docket for tomorrow. River to River, produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez, our executive producer, Catherine Perkins. From me, Ben Kiefer, and Katarina Sestarek, thank you for listening.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I've spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.